Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 11th of December, 2020. And let's start off the top of the program. Ola and Peter, you guys are doing a webinar next week on the energy sector. Take us through what we'll be looking at there.
Well, before I pass it on to Peter, I'll just I think we just basically start off by taking a look at slide number 7 in today's deck, because that just basically tells a story about what's the vaccine news nearly a month ago, or almost more than a month ago, what kind of impact it's had on the energy sector. On the chart, you can see that Brent has just basically had continuous weekly gains since then. We popped above $50 yesterday. We retraced the key retracement level of the whole sell-off from early January down to the low in April. And during this time, so Brent is now up 25% over the past month. Some of the oil majors are up close to 50%, and just generally a renewed interest in the sector. And it's basically also happening at a time where we will look into 2021, and we are potentially looking at weaker dollar. We're potentially looking at higher inflationary pressure, and we're obviously looking for a recovery in fuel demand across the world. And that is obviously making this sector, which Peter on lots of different measurements are really have been on the pressure for a long time.
It has. I mean, I think the relative underperformance of the global energy sector has basically lasted since the peak in 2008, just before the financial crisis really unraveled big time with the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. We had that peak $150 oil, and it's been a downhill move ever since. And we have these fantastic charts out. You know, Apple's market value is higher than the combined energy sector in the U.S., etc. So it's one of those. And as I think as Steen Jacobsen in our internal call this morning puts it, it's basically the divergence or battle or whatever you want to call it between the online world and the physical world. And energy very much sits on the physical world. I know the online world cannot live without energy, so there's obviously a feedback loop and a link there. But it is a story about the online versus the physical world, and energy makes the world moves around. So I think it's the big story for next year is what energy does, but also, you know, in general, commodities. So we'll be talking about it. But it's a difficult sector to really be talking enthusiastically about as an equity guy, because the big run up in the very long bull market we had in energy really inflated wages and operating costs in the industry in general. And the low price, it makes it very difficult for these companies to have cut down their cost and get their operations in shape. So it just means that if you look at it from a shareholder perspective, a lot of the energy companies, they're cyclical, so you don't get a very high valuation. The return on capital is very bad. It's very capital intensive industry. It's very so I mean, when you compare that to some of the online companies, it's just a very difficult one. But there are gems in between, and we'll of course be covering that on our presentation on Tuesday.
And sorry, together with that rise in the price of oil you showed on that chart, Ola, I was pulling up this morning actually an ETF, oil services ETF, the OIH, that's the ticker. From that late October low around 92, closed recently at 167. So you're talking about a more than 75% gain, you know, in the space of a month and a half. It's incredible how these cyclical industries can come back from depressed levels.
Exactly.
When you have the leverage of the equity versus just the underlying, you know, the underlying commodity itself. And I guess that'll be part of your focus, Peter, will be on the equity side, and of course, in addition to the commodity itself.
Yeah, and I'll just finish it off. I'll just try to reconcile the fact that we have a pandemic which is still not under control, which is actually rising. We got fuel demand weakening in the U.S., one of the world's biggest consumers. We got rising case in Asia as well, which has been a bit shielded up until now. So how we reconcile that with the price that continue to go higher, that's obviously something we'll take a look at as well.
Yeah, and we'll take a look at some other commodities that are rocketing higher later as well. Let's get back to the day-to-day here. The NASDAQ 100 managing, and then the U.S. equity market in general managing to come back from a little bit of further selling, sort of closing at par or unchanged on the day. But it's not really the broader averages. There is somewhat notable divergence in that you have, for example, the Russell 2000 actually managed a record close yesterday. And then the fairly strong U.S. 30-year auction keeping those rates quite low. I think that's perhaps some of the boost, Peter, behind things coming roaring back like the Teslas and other quite speculative stocks out there. I don't know if it was, but it's a key component for any of these stocks to have any sort of vague fundamental argument for being where they are, extremely, extremely low long-term rates. But take us through what you're seeing. And of course, the really the big thing was this Airbnb, this crazy IPO yesterday.
Yeah, Airbnb was definitely the story in equities. It's on slide four. It opened up 115% above the IPO price of 68, and the 68 IPO price was $8 above the high end of the range, the last range that were communicated to the market, which was $56 to $60 per share. So we're talking about a company that raised its IPO price three times into the first day of trading. And as I communicated on Twitter, I mean, it really tells you that. So the way it works in these IPOs is that it's predominantly institutionals and high net worth individuals that participate through the book runners in this IPO price. And the institutional clients, they are doing a thorough analysis and valuations, and they are, you know, they are calculating back and forth a lot of times to try to see where this works. So when you raise the price three times from the initial price, I mean, keep in mind that the investment banks have also, you know, been, you know, doing some calculus on the numbers. You have pushed the institutional investors a lot by raising it three times. And then regardless of this, it pops 115% on the first opening print. And it's just a retail flow coming in and they're buying the story. They don't look at the valuation. That's what I've been talking about. I mean, you can scream as much as you want into the world about, you know, the CAPE, you know, the cyclical adjusted earnings and blah, 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 all these metrics. It doesn't really matter as when you have more than 20% of the physical U.S. equity retail, equity flow being retail. I mean, they are probably the marginal buyer, and in a lot of the technology stocks, they're probably a bigger force than in the overall market. We just want to put it out here, and it's a cause for worry. I mean, we keep it balanced. Of course, you should be looking at the momentum in technology stocks and take advantage of that. But at the same time, please think about, you know, risk management and that things can change around on a dime. And the key thing here, I think the key catalyst, potential catalyst, are the interest rates, but also what commodities it does. I mean, there could be. It could be a very different year next year for technology stocks, also with the whole regulation that is coming galloping from the EU and the US and China. I mean, that could change the entire narrative and sentiment on digital companies.
I saw a headline this morning as well on Airbnb specifically. I can't remember the jurisdiction or what country was talking about it, but the tax treatment of people's Airbnb, earnings, people that are renting out their own place where they live, for example. I guess that could be another threat to that particular stock's profitability down the road.
There is a lot of threats, and the main one being regulation, whether it's on the Airbnb, the supply side, but also on the on the technology side, with Airbnb being forced out of big cities like Tokyo, and you know, Airbnb has been accused of being the dominant force of rent prices going significantly higher in a city like Barcelona. And the problem is people just buying expensive and great location apartments, and they don't live there. They just rent it out for Airbnb. So that has been a lot of the critique behind that. And then, as you rightly say, for instance, here in Denmark, I think it's the first 40 or 50,000 Danish kroner. So that's what's that, John? Is that $5,000 or $6,000?
A little bit more.
The first $6,000, a little bit more than that, $6,500, are tax free, that's obviously also something that that could be looked at from different. So I think Airbnb sort of has this same aura as Facebook. It's not really only positive PR these days.
All right, over in FX, we have a weaker dollar. It's sort of, you know, it fell again versus the euro. We had the ECB out doing everything that was flagged to do beforehand, the half trillion expansion in QE. Although oddly, Lagarde pointing out that perhaps not all of that money would be used in its QE purchases, I guess leaving some room for hope that it wouldn't be necessary. I guess that sounded hawkish at the margin, if you will. And then she tried to, you know, talk up their credibility that they're monitoring the exchange rate, but the market wasn't having much of that. I mean, we saw the euro dollar a little bit higher. A bigger story and bigger momentum in a place like Aussie dollar, however, you have to respect what's going on there. Have that on slide five. It was just a tremendous day yesterday, and we see it following through to a degree overnight. And really, there's one thing that's driving this. And it's not just a general risk sentiment. It's the iron ore price. This is its number one commodity export, iron ore prices in China. And I got to bring you in here, Ole, again. It's gone completely ballistic. We've seen an advance in the iron ore price of some 15% from just the low to high of the last 2 days. We saw a crazy run up overnight, some of that coming out of the market into this morning. But is this just crazy speculation, or is there some fundamental story that's really behind this? I mean, we talked a little bit about it, but it just, you know, I have a hard time looking at Aussie other than just, you know, that I'm speculating in Chinese iron ore futures at the moment.
You are indeed, John, and it is a combination of both. It is a crazy speculation being driven by current strong fundamentals. And the fundamentals, as we also highlighted yesterday, when we broke 150 overnight, we hit 160 in Singapore, trading close to unchanged now in the day, but it was an overnight spike. That's obviously, that just highlights a lot of speculative froth coming into the market. But the with supplies in the, from Brazil, their shipments was the lowest in 6 months during November. That's obviously the world's biggest producer. And combined with this infrastructure stimulus that we're seeing in China, which just led to an incredible amount of demand for steel, that's been the driving force. And adding to that, obviously, the vaccine optimism, which is currently driving a lot of commodities higher for 2021 outlook, is obviously also adding an additional dimension. Well, what's going to happen if we're going to see a big rebound in potential stimulus or infrastructure spending in Europe and the US next year? So it is a story that that has the speculators' attention. And with that, obviously, we have to at the same time be a bit careful, because we're already above levels where even some of the most optimistic forecasts were seeing the iron ore to be trading in 21.
All right. And on the dollar note as well, it doesn't help talking about everyone looking towards the post-vaccine hopes. But in the meantime, we had the jobless claims out this last week at plus 853K. That's a huge jump from the prior low 700K territory. This is not a good sign. And even the continuing claims were up for the first time in a while, plus almost a quarter of a million there to 5.76 million. So it really is, we've talked about this before, just a market that's operating on far, far fast forward rather than the current situation, in some cases at least. And then I can't help in FX, but we have to talk about Brexit. This is the number one issue besides something like iron ore and Aussie dollar driving volatility here. We have a lot of disaster insurance going on in the options markets, purchasing of that. So cable, sterling versus dollar, 1 week volatility up to 20%. Oddly, sterling dollar pretty sideways because of the weak dollar here. But I would suspect that this is the better place to price in the risk of a harder Brexit than we've anticipated. You know, I talked yesterday about that I was firmly convinced they'll come up with some sort of fudge or delay. I'm weakening a little bit on that stance, and I suspect that even if we get some extension on negotiations on the terms of the post-Brexit period, I'm beginning to suspect that there is some more no-deal risk than anticipated, but maybe a no-deal risk that avoids a cliff edge. In other words, that they sit down and get practical so that there's not some sudden backup in lorries at the border, these kinds of issues, but that they sit down and figure out what is the transition period for a no-deal Brexit. So if the EU is not going to move its position, I think Boris Johnson will have to knuckle down and go forward with something that resembles a no-deal. So let's respect that. Sunday is the, or we're supposed to get a headline on the status of negotiations. And you see euro sterling on slide six, we've popped back to the high of the 2 month range, but there is some fallout for Europe as well, we have to remember. So that's why I would prefer, if there's going to be a big move in sterling to the downside, to look at optionality in sterling versus the dollar and see more volatility there. And I would suspect that the euro dollar rally might even be cut short in the short term by a headline that catches the market offside as we come into Monday trade. Yeah.
And John, just while you've been speaking here, we just had the headline coming out hitting the screens that von der Leyen is telling the EU summit that no deal most likely option. And we actually just saw euro sterling pop a bit on that. So it is going to be very much a headline driven market now.
Yeah, I agree. And, it's almost existential. The EU just does not want to give in on the state aid issue. And that is almost one of the key issues and causes behind Brexit in the first place, was to to focus spending where it wants to promote national industries, promote the national interest, and rebuild the economy. So,
but John, doesn't it also make sense? I mean, with this whole Brexit, I mean, they both parties think they have a strong hand, or at least they pretend to have a strong hand. Why not just go with a no deal and see how trade and the economies evolve from that situation? And then we'll probably, I guess, within a year know who had the weakest hand, and then that will probably, and that person, or that part will probably come begging back to the table and just strike a deal.
Yeah, or say, look, let's just go on with a free trade deal, but with the warning or the caveat that if we see that you're doing too much state aid or whatever, you have some sort of framework that says, look, if we decide this, then there'll be tariffs. If not, then there won't. I don't know. It does seem, I think that the UK is going to more thoroughly leave the EU's orbit than perhaps traders are positioned for, whatever the label is put on what happens after the December 31st of this year. Enough on that. Let's also look at, and it's still an issue that worries me, the U.S. stimulus situation. We're all assuming that deal is going to happen. Negotiations are ongoing, but between the lines, the situation looks rather dysfunctional, to say the least, especially with the lame duck president who's spending all of his time trying to overturn the election result. I think this could risk going to the wire as well. So just a note of concern there, not to say we won't get a stimulus deal, but it could prove smaller, or we could have some nail biting between now and the realization of that deal. And then I don't know if you guys want to hop in with anything before we get to the calendar. You have a good slide here, Ole, as well, on so-called Dr. Copper, i.e. that the copper price is a good indicator on the status of the global economy, and what you're calling Dr. Cotton.
Yeah, it was actually just coming from our morning conversation where I highlighted that spike we had in copper overnight related to the iron ore spike. But also yesterday we had the WASDE, World Agricultural Supply Demand report out from the U.S. government. And the one that actually, or the two that came out strongest from that report was wheat, which was also supported by potentially Russia putting export taxes on their wheat, but also especially cotton, where we've seen weather developments slow down the or reduce production in the U.S., also India and Pakistan. And as Steen said this morning, Dr. Copper has got the PhD in economics. Dr. Cotton is the PhD in consumer behavior. And obviously, if both are going up, then we will that will just add to the reflation and the rising the potential risk of inflation moving into 2021. And I think that that's a good segue to you, Peter. You put in this chart that highlights the correlation between bond yields and stocks.
Well, I don't. I wouldn't call it a correlation. It's UBS's try to indicate what the interest rate sensitivity is. And for my taste, I don't think the relationship here they try to portray is too linear for my taste. But it's also a difficult thing because in theory, we know that the discount rate obviously is positive for future cash flows, but then also we know the interest rates is very much linked to the growth rate, which then is also impacts future cash flows. So it's not an easy relationship to distill. And the biggest difficulty is that if you look at interest rate changes and how it translates into the moves we have seen in equities, whether you use half a year, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 or 10 years look back windows, the math suggests actually that there is a positive relationship. So equities actually go up on it has a positive relationship to changes in interest rates, and that makes it actually more difficult. So that's why I think that the majority of the market is not positioned for an interest rate sensitivity, and it is very difficult to see directly in the data. So it's something that we are guessing, I think, is there, and I think it will be. It will not hit all the parts of the equity market in the same way. I think the segment of the equity market that is the most sensitive are the ones that have zero earnings. So that's obviously, the less earnings you have, or the more negative earnings you have, the far out your positive cash flows are and your high duration that is. But On the other side of that, we don't know. I mean, typical reaction function to high interest rate would be, you know, the institutional investors being wary of equities to some extent. But we have all this big crowd of new retail investors, and I'm not sure that they think very deeply about interest rates and how that affects equities. So, yeah, it's not easy. That's my point. But we're speculating that there is a link.
There certainly will be a link for many sectors of the stock market if we ever get that break higher in yields above. Let's starting with the 1% level on the 10-year benchmark. We've mentioned that level
quickly before we end this podcast. I would say I think the most important thing is actually I think it's the real rate that is the important aspect for equities, and maybe not so much the actual nominal interest rate. So that's why you need to have this broader perspective when we go into 2021. We have to look at commodities, we have to look at inflation and the rates and how equities respond to it. So I think it will be a quite a dynamic situation where we will sort of constantly review our view and guesses on how equities will act on these interest rate moves. So I don't want to portray that I know for certain what will happen. So I will keep an open mind and let's see what happens when we roll into the new year.
Yeah, and I don't want to spend too much time on the macro calendar for next week. Have a look at it. You usually have Monday to have a more thorough look at the week ahead anyway. Although that Monday does look like maybe one of the last chances, because that is when the election results get finalized to a degree, with these U.S. electors meeting and finalizing the results. And the FOMC meeting, by far the biggest event risk of the week next week. You have to wonder if their message is going to be as supportive of this rather frothy speculative market as, or if the market even cares, as long as they don't come out and outright push against the market. And I doubt they'll do that, but let's see. It's a key sort of last of the year, if you will, major event risk heading into the Christmas and New Year's period at the end of the year. So next week, one of the final, literally the final week of the year in terms of macro risks, and we'll have to have a close look at things then. For now, have a great weekend, safe trading out there, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.